The History of the World podcast, written and presented by Chris Hasler.
The Ancient World Cup.
Hello everyone, Chris here from the History of the World podcast with a special bonus episode to celebrate our reaching the end of the Ancient World Cup. Now, we've been doing this for well over a year, I believe. The Ancient World Cup started out as a competition with 64 teams in it. We're now down to the final two. And we've been voting on 48 occasions so far to get the list down to two. Originally, these 64 teams were put into 16 groups of four. The top two advanced to the next stage, and then we had to have a couple of playoffs where there were a couple of tied games within the groups. Then we went to straight knockout with the 32 teams remaining. And each week we've been voting on Facebook, we've been voting on Instagram, we've been voting on Twitter to boil it down to the final two teams. And we finally got there. The final two teams battling it out to become the Ancient World Cup champions are the ancient Egyptians and the Romans. And quite simply, all we're voting for is who we think is best. Who's the best out of ancient Egypt and the Romans? Well, it's up to you. Next week, you'll be voting on the Facebook official page, the History of the World podcast page on Facebook. The unofficial History of the World podcast unofficial fan group. That is also a place where you can vote. You can vote on Instagram and you can vote on Twitter. Now, if you don't know where to find those pages, then just go to the historyoftheworldpodcast.com website, click on the interact section and it's all there. With lots of other places, the Tapper Talk discussion forum, Tumblr, TikTok, it's all there. Just go there if you want to interact with the History of the World podcast. So, the purpose of this week's episode, this bonus episode, is to review the two teams that are going to be facing each other next week. So let's talk about them and see if you cannot make your mind up, whether we can help you to make your mind up one way or the other. So let's start with the first team, the ancient Egyptians. Now, the ancient Egyptians were drawn in Group B of the first round. And they were put in with the Macedonians, the Carthaginians and the Epirotes. So you can call that a very Mediterranean themed group, that one, I would suggest. Now, the Epirotes really didn't attract a lot of the vote, with them being quite a small influence, with their King Pyrrhus really was their strong point in history. They only got 3% of the vote. The Carthaginians were narrowly edged out of it by the Macedonians. The Carthaginians got 24% of the vote, with everything that they did to dominate the Mediterranean Sea before the rise of the Romans. And the Macedonians advanced with the ancient Egyptians, and so they were separated going into the knockout phases, so we made sure that they didn't play each other in the first round of the knockout. The ancient Egyptians achieved, my eyesight's terrible, give me a moment. The ancient Egyptians achieved 44% of the vote, so they got quite a large share. Although not the majority share, they were clearly the winners of the group, though. Now, when they advanced through to the knockout stages, they were drawn in match number 6 against the Seleucids. So the Seleucids, of course, once again, quite a Mediterranean-based society. They were a child society of the Macedonians after Alexander the Great had conquered most of Persia right up to the Indus Valley. The Seleucid Empire really displaced the Achaemenid Persians who the Macedonians conquered. And the Seleucids really were the Hellenistic rulers of Persia. When they played the ancient Egyptians in the Ancient World Cup, the ancient Egyptians stormed to victory. It was like hands down victory with 84% of the vote. They advanced through to the round of 16. In the round of 16, they faced the Babylonians. And the Babylonians, very much a Mesopotamian society. They're probably most famous for Hammurabi and his law code, but also more their infamy. It surrounds their destruction of the Temple of Jerusalem and their capture of the Jews. But when the ancient Egyptians played them, they knocked them out. They got 67% of the vote. And then they advanced through to the quarterfinals where they would meet with the Sumerians. The Sumerians, like the ancient Egyptians, very ancient society. The two societies invented writing and subsequently, as a consequence, invented history. The Sumerians, once again, another Mesopotamian society, but we're going further back in history than the Babylonians. So we're going a millennium earlier. And the Sumerians, very much the same kind of time frame as the old kingdom of Egypt, if you like. But the ancient Egyptians won with 63% of the vote. So that was their closest game, was against the Sumerians. But they advanced then through to the semi-final where they played a team who they had in their group right at the beginning of the tournament, the Macedonians. And of course, the Macedonians are spearheaded by Alexander the Great, who arguably achieved the greatest military conquest of any individual in history when he took Macedon from Europe all the way over to the Indus Valley. But it wasn't enough to defeat the ancient Egyptians. They won again with 67% of the vote and made it through to the final. So what of the story of the ancient Egyptians? Who exactly were they? Well, a lot of Egyptologists cite the Narmer palette or Narmer palette, which can be seen, it was still on display in the museum in Cairo, as one of the very first artifacts from a unified Egypt. So there were societies all along the Nile River before the period that we refer to as ancient Egypt, but maybe Narmer or King Menes, if indeed they might have even been the same person. A unified Egypt as under one rule, you could say, from around 3100 BCE. But really, the period that we refer to as the Old Kingdom didn't sort of come into being until a few hundred years later. So there were still dynasties coming and going and various pharaohs. But the period that Egyptologists refer to as the Old Kingdom sort of started maybe in the 27th century BCE. And this was the period which gave us the pyramids. Previous to that, we did have large tombs built, but they were very basic and sort of resembled the base of a pyramid rather than an entire pyramid. This pyramid building culture started in these years of the Old Kingdom. And obviously still they're very much a wonder of the world today. So we can see these incredible objects that have survived all this time and still baffle modern societies as to how on earth they could have been constructed. The pyramids themselves were built really to be tombs for the pharaohs. And the Egypt as a society, it did modernise over the period of time that it existed. But it also looked to enhance its influence, its borders, and expand. And certainly upriver of the River Nile, where it would attempt to grow its influence into the lands of the Nubians, who lived to the south of the Egyptians. But the period of ancient Egypt is sort of somewhat broken up into three main periods where the Egyptian kingdom was particularly strong, and we call them the Old Kingdom, the Middle Kingdom, and the New Kingdom. Now, in between those periods, there were maybe you could argue periods where Egypt fragmented and broke up, and it was no longer unified. So certainly ancient Egypt wasn't, it wouldn't be fair to call it a continuous existence of 2000 years. It did sort of re-emerge and reunify on a couple of occasions during this period that we call ancient Egypt. The period of the New Kingdom saw the expulsion of a peoples called the Hyksos, who had come in and contributed towards a civil unrest in Egypt. And when they were expelled and the New Kingdom came along, a different kind of tomb building replaced that of the pyramids that had taken place during the 3rd millennium BCE. And we start seeing the tombs such as the Valley of the Kings being more commonplace during the 2nd millennium BCE, the later years of the ancient Egyptian kingdoms. Not only would the Egyptians look to extend their influence up the Nile into the upper reaches of the Nile River, beyond the cataracts, but also into Asian lands, as they would try and encroach on the lands of the Levant and spread their influence there, and that would bring them into conflict with the Hittites, who were another powerful empire based in the modern lands of Turkey in the landmass called Anatolia. And so we see the ancient Egyptians getting very much involved in Eurasian politics within the Middle East. But then there would be a phenomenon called the Late Bronze Age Collapse, and which is a very mysterious period in history where it appears that the trade networks of the entire Near East collapsed, and many mighty kingdoms and empires either disappeared off the face of the earth or just completely weakened to become a shell of what they formerly were. And this really spelt the end of the New Kingdom of Egypt and the decline in ancient Egypt as we celebrate it. And the last real sort of, the last big ruler of Egypt who we can say was the last successful ruler of Egypt was maybe Ramesses III. And after his reign, it was all downhill for the ancient Egyptians as the New Kingdom sort of petered out and foreign influences from Nubia and from Libya and also from Assyria would come in and start dominating ancient Egyptian politics. And that was during the 12th century BCE. So you could argue that ancient Egypt lasted just shy of around 2,000 years if we look at the dynasties starting from King Menes' creation of ancient Egypt as a united kingdom, right the way through to perhaps the end of the reign of Ramesses III. So apart from the pyramids and apart from these wonderful tombs in the Upper Nile, what did the ancient Egyptians actually do for us? Well, we know that the Egyptians were producing faience, which is arguably the precursor to the modern invention of glass. So we could attribute that to the Egyptians. They certainly were building some of the very first cities in the world. So such was their wealth from the River Nile that they were able to build huge settlements, the likes of which were not really easy to find in other areas of the world at all. They created boats that were made of wood that was sewn together, so that the planks of the wood were sewn together, and this was something that the Egyptians created so that they could travel and transport along the River Nile. Of course, they gave us the pyramids, which were an enhancement of the original mastaba tombs, which preceded them. Certainly later on in the ancient Egyptian tenure, we can see that they were producing scientific papers and to do with biology and mathematics. And this would all be recorded on papyrus, which was essentially an Egyptian invention, which was a precursor to the Chinese invention of paper. They also produced ink as well, which so that they could write on the papyrus. So ink production was something that emanated from Egypt as well. They produced their own hieroglyphic writing style, but we could also attribute this kind of thing to Mesopotamia, and the same with the production of a calendar, a yearly calendar, which would be helpful for agriculture. We can also see similar things emerging in Mesopotamia as well. With agriculture, they would invent things like the ox-drawn plough and the sickle would be enhanced. They were expert irrigators of the water. They did wonderful things with the Nile River. But once again, a lot of these things can be attributed to Mesopotamians as well, so we have to be careful. They used to take care about their appearance. The higher classes of Egyptian society would use makeup. They would wear wigs. They would even clean their teeth using a type of toothpaste. And they were experts at mummification. They were able to mummify their most important members of society, such as their pharaohs. Not only would the Egyptians have great male rulers, but they would have great female rulers as well, such as Hatshepsut, who was a female pharaoh. They would have Thutmose III, who was Hatshepsut's stepson and was a great military warrior. But then also sometime after, you had Ramesses II, who was very famous for his successes in the Battle of Kadesh, and was known for his great vanity, all of his temples that he built in celebration of himself. We also could argue that there was the first signs of monotheism when Akhenaten created the religion that would honour just one of the deities, one of the traditional deities, the solar deity called Aten. And this was one of the first instances of monotheism. So there you go. That's probably as much as I can give you to convince you to vote for the ancient Egyptians. But also there are others that have written in this week and given me their reasons for voting for the ancient Egyptians. Timothy John Ignatius McKenna says that their civilization was far more peaceful and than the Romans, and the engineering was phenomenal. Besides, the Romans knew lead was bad, but still ran their domestic water with it. Sandy Lynn has said that the Egyptians lasted for thousands of years and their art is so beautiful. And they had female pharaohs, Egypt all the way. Mohammed Hammam has put that the Egyptian civilization lasted for much longer than the Romans. The art is incredible and still many things are still excavated every day. And Mohammed is an Egyptian, so, you know, maybe a little bit biased, but there you go. Eric G. Young has said it's a difficult choice because both civilizations have left indelible marks on the modern world, but ancient Egypt covers nearly 3,000 years of history, ancient Rome nearly 2,000 if we take it all the way to the conquest of Constantinople in 1453. Over those two overlapping periods of time, each nation had strengths and weaknesses. If you consider the high watermark for each, which occurred at different times, Egypt was a 1,000-year-old civilization when Rome was just a village. By the same token, the Roman Empire was substantially larger than Egypt at its height. Its armies were larger and its military techniques far superior. Both civilizations have contributed to art and architecture, engineering, and we can't discount the reality that Rome actually conquered Ptolemaic Egypt. All that said, Eric's vote is still with ancient Egypt. Overall, it was a cultural, artistic and military powerhouse long before Rome. So thank you, everybody, for your contribution. We've made a case for ancient Egypt and now the case rests. We move on to the Romans. Now, the journey of the Romans to the Ancient World Cup final started in Group N, and they were drawn with the Athenians, the Nazca, and the Spartans. So quite a heavy group there. We lost the Nazca and the Spartans. The Nazca were those who those South American cultures who made those incredible geoglyphs that we really didn't really know how wonderful they were until we could take to the skies in the last sort of 100 years or so. And the Spartans, of course, got to be one of the most powerful teams to have been knocked out in the group stages. But the Athenians went through with the Romans, and of course they avoided each other in the first knockout round, as is what we deliberately do. Now, the Romans, they got drawn against the Cushites in the round of 32, match number 9. And the Cushites, of course, much more closely related to Egyptian culture, as they were a culture from the Upper Nile, from Nubian lands, maybe in the Sudanese lands. The Romans put paid to them by quite a heavy margin there, winning 83% of the votes. They would go through to the next round where they would meet the Minoans, arguably the first European civilization on the island of Crete, and responsible for giving us the wonderful site of Knossos, amongst other things. The Romans defeated the Minoans with a score of 67% of the votes. They went through to the quarterfinals where they would face the Anglo-Saxons, the Germanic invaders of Great Britain, and the culture which is responsible for creating the modern country of England before it was conquered by the Normans. The Romans crushed the Anglo-Saxons with 72% of the votes, and then went through to the semi-finals where they would meet the Athenians, who were in their group. And the Romans defeated the Athenians in their group. They also defeated them in the semi-final. The Athenians, who were attributed with being maybe the inventors of modern democracy. The Romans defeated them with 68% of the vote to reach the final. Let's have a look at the timeline of the Romans. Now, according to tradition, the Roman kingdom was founded in the year 753 BCE. But archaeology tends to suggest that there was a settlement at Rome before this time. However, we don't have any kind of written account of that being the case. Towards the end of the 6th century BCE, the expulsion of the Roman king Tarquinius Superbus meant the end of the Roman kingdom, and it would be the start of the period that we refer to as the Roman Republic. Rome would remain no more than a city-state until the year 390 BCE, where it was famously sacked by the Gauls, long before it had even become like an international powerhouse. But after this sacking, Rome went on the offensive and started to make plans to take control of its neighbouring tribes and societies. And around 100 years after this sacking, Rome had successfully taken control of the whole of central Italy. Then its ambitions would be to take over the entire Italian peninsula, and this would bring it into conflict with what was what at the time was the most dominant Mediterranean society of the Western Mediterranean, the Carthaginians. And so the period of the Punic Wars started between Carthage and Rome. Rome would initially successfully take Sicily from the Carthaginians, and then the Carthaginians fought back with the famous journey of Hannibal across the Alps with his army and his concession of elephants. But this was not a successful campaign in the grand scheme of things, as the Romans managed to take over lands of Spain, pushing the Carthaginians back to Africa, and then the Romans would then expand eastwards into the lands of Macedonia, which by now was a shadow of its former self since the years of Alexander the Great. Rome was now starting to dominate much of the Mediterranean coastlines. Once the Romans sacked the cities of Carthage and Corinth, during the 2nd century BCE, it had control of the entire Western Mediterranean, all the lands of the Western Mediterranean, and now pretty much most of Greece. One of the biggest battles for the Romans was with itself, as the aristocratic class was coming under pressure from a socialist movement that threatened to debilitate the entire Roman Republic. And basically the citizens of Rome were not going to stand for all of this elitist attitude from the aristocracy in Rome. Initially, Rome just saw it as a minor rebellion, but it started escalating and gathering more support and more momentum. So the Romans had to make concessions to settle the mood of Rome down and to remain in control of its own affairs, so that the citizens weren't going to mount a huge rebellion. One of the greatest supporters of social reform was one Julius Caesar, who was an incredibly wily statesman and managed to gain power and support in the face of the Roman Republic's staunch Senate and political system. Julius Caesar managed to conquer Gaul for the Romans, but when the Romans attempted to pull him out of Gaul without any reward, he then turned his army on Rome itself. Caesar had so much support, though, that this turned into a civil war rather than the put down of a rebellious statesman. It actually turned into a civil war, and Julius Caesar came out on top and became the sole ruler of Rome. He almost conquered Rome from within. Now, Caesar wasn't officially the monarch of Rome, but he almost established a single rule that would become the shape of things to come after Julius Caesar's death. Octavian would end up being elected as the sole emperor of the Roman Empire. So this was the time of the transition from the Republic to the Empire. And Octavian would rule as Augustus. This would then instigate a real period of maybe over 100 years where Rome would actually become more powerful and conquer more lands. It would conquer most of Great Britain and certainly end up making moves into the Middle East and taking a lot of territory in the Middle East. And this is when the Roman Empire was at its most powerful, the earliest decades of the second century. It would actually be an outbreak of disease, possibly smallpox, that would be the thing that would stop Rome in its tracks and start to bring it into a more, make it more of a level playing field for Roman opponents. Now, all along, there was an underlying issue for the Romans where it always needed to make social reforms, as the population had a powerful voice in Rome, and so it would have to exercise reforms. Roman citizenship was something that was demanded by those conquered lands that were denied that right. The people of the conquered lands were denied the right of Roman citizenship, and so the Romans had to introduce that in order to stop rebellions and different provinces attempting to splinter off from the main Roman Empire. Another big issue for the Romans was always that the Germanic tribes to their north were constantly trying to raid lands and infiltrate its borders. The Goths being a fine example of one of those Germanic tribes. Also, the size of the Roman Empire played against it somewhat, and the Emperor Diocletian looked to break the empire up and have it ruled by multiple emperors in order to prevent there being too much in the way of rebellion from within the empire. So he would chop the empire up and into something called the Tetrarchy, so that there would be multiple emperors bringing more control over the rule of the empire as a whole. During the 4th century, the centre of power of the Roman Empire shifted towards the east, and a new capital city was established at Constantinople, which almost condemned the western provinces of the Roman Empire somewhat, as it was seen that Constantinople should be the new capital. And the pagan belief systems of the Romans started becoming a bit outdated, as there was a real desire for many to convert to monotheistic religions such as Judaism and especially Christianity, which really became extremely popular during the 4th century. However, the Rome was weakening, and the appearance of the Huns in Europe really started challenging the Romans, and they found themselves having to spend a lot of money to defend their lands against people such as the Huns and Germanic invaders such as the Goths. And it was really causing a big problem for the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire would convert completely to Christianity. It would become the state religion, and the empire itself was officially split into two halves, the West and the East, and they would be governed independently. A branch of the Goths called the Visigoths scored an incredible defeat of the Romans at Adrianople before they would go on at the beginning of the 5th century to sack Rome for the first time since the Gauls did it in 390 BCE, some 800 years earlier. Eventually in 476, the last Roman ruler of the Western Roman Empire, the traditional Roman Empire, was deposed, and this marked the end of what we traditionally refer to as the Roman Empire. But apart from the sanitation, the medicine, education, wine, public order, irrigation, roads, a fresh water system and public health, what have the Romans ever done for us? When the Romans became international traders, they would build huge concrete buildings such as the Porticus Aemilia, which was something that was not really seen anywhere else. So this was one of the first huge concrete buildings that was ever created. Now, when the Romans expanded eastwards, they would consume Greek lands, and with the Greek lands came all of that knowledge and all that polymath expertise that came with it. And of course, one of the inventions was the force pump, which was a kind of hydraulic system used for pumping water. And Vitruvius would be very interested in this. Vitruvius was an architect who was responsible for the construction of aqueducts in Rome, and he would use this this incredible knowledge of hydraulic power in order to help him with these construction of aqueducts. Now, we mentioned earlier that the Egyptians produced faience, which was the precursor to glass, and we know that the Egyptians were one of the earliest glass producers, but apparently the Romans were maybe the first to use glass in windows. So let's find out which ones among you, the hot worlders, the listeners to the podcast, are planning to vote for the Romans and why. Shane Smith has said, as awesome as the Egyptians were, and the monuments they left behind, they were basically conquered by everyone that tried. And when they were at full power, their influence did not go much past their little corner of the world. The Roman Empire pretty much conquered the whole known world. Most of the countries that we know of, from Spain, Germany, England, Egypt, all bowed to Rome. Brenda Wass has said they are the basis for what we call Western civilization. Serge Schwinard has put that the Romans, because of their impact on the Western world and their lasting legacy. Fred Gerloff has said that almost everything that came after them was a result of them. Peter Marcia Huskard has put the Romans because the Egyptians were not of this world. Make of that what you will. Jürgen Willemsen has put their influence is still present in today's world. And Nathan Housie has put it has to be Rome. They came, they saw, and they conquered. Well, I hope that that's given you some food for thought and maybe helped you to decide who you're going to vote for next week. Remember, Facebook, the official History of the World podcast Facebook page, the unofficial Facebook fan group, Twitter and Instagram, from Monday, you will be able to register your vote for who you want to win the Ancient World Cup between ancient Egypt and the Romans. Next week, in our episode next week, we'll be talking about the Battle of Grunwald, which is a battle between the Polish-Lithuanian coalition and the Teutonic Knights. After we finish that episode, we will be announcing the winner of the Ancient World Cup. So until next week, be good.
The History of the World podcast, written and presented by Chris Hasler. Please consider making a financial contribution by going to the historyoftheworldpodcast.com website and clicking on the Patreon link. Email the show at historyoftheworldpodcast@mail.com. And don't forget to join our social media at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. See you next time.